Before we dive into this episode, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please take a second to leave a review. Reviews help boost the show so that others struggling in a toxic workplace can find it. You can also go to my website, toxicworkplacepodcast.com, to send me a message. Or if you want to be a guest on the show, you can fill out a submission request. Your story will be completely anonymous. All names are changed to protect the employee and the employer. I've also recently added a toxic workplace quiz where you can answer questions about your current situation and see where it falls on the toxicity scale. Go to toxicworkplacepodcast.com.
At 38 years old, I went back to college. I studied accounting. I had to do an internship.
This is Kylie. Before going back to school for accounting, Kylie was busy raising her family in Idaho while working a variety of jobs in different industries.
So I went to my advisor. She knew somebody who worked at an electric utility that was an acting CFO. They had a large project that they were thinking of finishing up, and she would speak to him about possibly hiring an intern. She contacted me a few days later and said he agreed. The job actually required like a high level of attention to detail and accuracy, and I tackled this project with a vengeance. I completed the project with a week to spare. That led to them wanting to keep me. I loved the culture. Everybody got along. It was professional. It was refreshing to work in a place where the people were nice and everybody at some point or another during my internship came and introduced themselves to me. It was just wonderful. I loved it.
Kylie loves tackling a challenge, and being able to help this utility company complete this project in record time made her feel accomplished. She enjoyed her internship and the people she worked with. So when this company offered her a permanent position, it was an easy decision. The early years at this company were great for Kylie. It wasn't until she reported to a bullying manager that her world would come crashing down. My name's Carly, and this is Toxic Workplace, a podcast that gives a platform to those who have survived highly toxic work experiences, only to come out with newfound wisdom and a renewed sense of self. A toxic workplace is more than just the daily grind. It's a soul-crushing experience that will chip away at your sanity until you're about to lose your mind. It's an abusive relationship that's hard to leave. And the longer you stay, the more you lose sight of who you set out to be.
I ended up at the front desk part-time, and then a full-time position did finally open up, and I became a customer service representative. During that time, I went from front desk into billing, and then I was in billing for about 2 months before another opportunity came up to work into operations. Every time there was an opening, a new opening for a position, managers would approach me and ask me, are you going to apply for this job? And we really think that this would be a good fit for you. The job in operations, I didn't think I was qualified for at all. I looked at the job description and I thought, oh, it's not accounting. But I thought, you know, I think I can learn this. I can do it. I applied for it and I was offered the job, and that started my career in operations. For about 3 years, it was a wonderful position. My manager loved me. He actually told me one time at a work party that he was making fun of how nervous I was in the interview. And I said, well, I really wanted the job. And he said, you had the job a year before you got it. We had planned on having you come back. And all we needed you to do was apply. So I was a rock star for a long time at this place. What happened when the toxicity started was that manager retired and a female manager came in. And that's where the story starts. She worked in the warehouse and she stepped into the role of operations manager. She had no qualifications to be in this field. Not to say that she can't be successful in this field, but I think that gave her a lot of insecurities. So when I first came back to operations, there was another coordinator back there, and she was very insecure. I will call her Stacy, hard worker. We did not get along. And I tried really hard to, I guess, see things from her point of view. But you can't always get along with people that you work with. And that was fine with me. I just did the best I could. So my manager would come and well, she wasn't my manager at that time. She hadn't taken over that role yet, but she would come and talk to me about Stacy. And she would ask me how she was doing. You know, she's like, yeah, Stacy's always had kind of an insecurity. She's always had issues with getting along with people. And I said, well, this is what I'm doing. And I really don't think she's a bad person. And we would talk about her. So she knew right off the bat that even before she became my manager, that there was an issue there. Some of the red flags that I noticed, I guess I didn't notice it at the time. This place had a great culture and the professionalism was like outstanding as far as I was concerned. Well, when I got back to operations, it was a little different. Stacy and I worked in this very open area. I always called it the airport because that's where everybody came through. If you were talking about anything, even if you were whispering, sometimes people could hear you upstairs. So you had to be really careful what you said. Well, my manager, she's not my manager at this time. She was a warehouse manager. She would come in and she'd go, oh, girls, you wouldn't believe it. I had the best sex last night. I was like, oh my gosh, everyone can hear you. And then I started noticing that she would make fun of almost everyone behind their back. And she was really loud. She had a really loud, cackly laugh. There was a point in time where she discovered Snapchat. So she would Snapchat Stacy and I these little things about how, you know, when you have the little mouse face with the high-pitched voice, she would Snapchat us and tell us how she had to reprimand one of her employees. She made fun of the lead warehouseman all the time about how stupid he was. And there was another time where she was talking about another employee and she was making fun of how he still lived in a double-wide trailer. And there's so many more things that she said, but those are the things that I could remember off the top of my head. And little did I know how big of a bully she was.
Kylie's manager's inappropriate behavior stemmed from a mix of insecurity and inexperience. She overshared about her personal life, which made Kylie and others who could overhear her uncomfortable. She was given a position of authority despite her immaturity and disrespect for others. Insecure managers who lack qualifications may exert their authority excessively to compensate for their perceived shortcomings. In this case, Kylie's manager is engaging in gossip as a mean of exerting control and deflecting attention from her shortcomings. This behavior not only undermines trust and morale within the team, but also fuels a toxic work environment.
Stacy was also one that kind of shocked me at times. Like I said, she's a hard worker. She is dedicated to doing her job correctly. I really did admire her for that. But her personality was, it clashed with me and with quite a few other people. She would talk about all the drama that would go on with her. So she had two teenage daughters. They would get in fights with their friends and she was just totally wrapped up in all this drama with her daughters. And she would go on and on about her daughters. She had constant stomach problems. She would complain about her stomach hurting all the time. And I mean, I had some empathy about it, but after a while, when you have to sit next to somebody like that all day long, it's kind of frustrating. And I would have other people, some of them would say, oh, I bet you can't stand listening to her talk about her daughters. And I would just deflect from that. And the reason why I bring this up will come to light later. So then I also worked with, I'll call him Steve. Steve was the superintendent and he had a really stressful job. He had a lot on his shoulders. He was older, so he's very old school back in the day when you used to yell at your employees and, you know, you could do whatever you want. So he was always yelling and making assumptions and he would get really red in the face when he'd get mad. When I first came back to operations, him and I got along really well. I did notice that his reports did not like him. He was not well liked at all. He would get instantly mad about things. I had another employee come up and tell me not to trust him. He said he talks bad about everyone behind their backs. And so I kept that in the back of my head. And I was just really careful what I said.
The work culture in operations was much different from Kylie's previous 3 years at this company because of the people who ran the department. Steve and Stacy were hard to get along with, and Kylie's soon-to-be manager was quick to gather information from her to triangulate Kylie against Stacy and Steve. This would give her manager authority over her that would later be used as a manipulation tactic.
There was a point in time where the acting ops manager decided to make her mine and Stacy's manager. And so when this occurred, we started having one-on-ones. And she'd bring me into her office. And every time it was always, what's going on with Steve? What's going on with Stacy? And now that I look back on it, I feel like she was just trying to gather information instead of actually trying to see, you know, what do you need to fulfill your role? It was all about trying to get information from me. And of course, I willingly gave it to her because I didn't know. And she would also have one-on-ones with Stacy as well. And I don't know what went on between their one-on-one situation, but it ended up my relationship with Stacy, it didn't get any better. It kind of got worse. Just these little tiny things that would just get worse and worse. And I would make Stacy mad somehow. And she wouldn't talk to me for like 3 or 4 days. She wouldn't share information with me, which was really, really important in our roles. So a lot of times I wouldn't even be privy of things that were going on. Some of the roles that we covered in that position were, we dealt with all the service orders and work orders that came through operations. We dealt with outages. I was a dispatcher as well. We had to radio the field, like the linemen, anytime that they had any information that they had to give us or that we needed to give them, we radioed them. We answered phone calls, which a lot of the phone calls were angry people, but it was in the midst of an outage or somebody might be at my desk or I might have a pile of paperwork. And so it was really important that her and I communicate. So when I was in one-on-one with my manager, I would tell her, I understand that maybe I'm not perfect and maybe I'm doing something that isn't right or that annoys her, or maybe I said something that upset her, but she needs to communicate that with me. And so, and then my manager would say, well, I'll see what I can do. And that's all there was to it.
The silent treatment creates feelings of rejection, isolation, and emotional distress. In this case, it created misunderstandings and resentment between Stacy and Kylie, which further escalated their conflict. By failing to address the situation, their manager further exacerbated the feud by taking sides and fueling gossip, which undermined their team's cohesion and morale.
We had outages in the middle of the night, and they would call us in to work these outages. And for some reason, Stacy was the one that was getting called into all of them. I wasn't getting called in. And so I brought it up one night because we could see it on our phones. And I called my manager and I asked her why I wasn't being called in to these outages. I did tell my manager, I said, Stacy's repeatedly said she doesn't like overtime. I've expressed repeatedly that I want overtime and I'm available to come in any time. That right there is right when mine and my manager's relationship started to go downhill. I think what happened is I caused an issue that she thought was kind of a drama. And she pulled me into her office and basically said, there's no room for drama in operations. And I said, well, I wasn't trying to be dramatic. I just wanted to know why I wasn't ever called in and I want to work it. And she said, well, I'm not going to have you girls fighting over who gets to come in and who doesn't. And I made a point of telling her, I said, well, I've told you before, and I think you've heard Stacy tell you that she doesn't like working overtime.
Asking for additional overtime when it's available or pointing out a discrepancy, such as another employee benefiting from all the overtime, isn't creating drama. However, Kylie's manager mishandled the situation by making her feel like she was asking for too much or unnecessarily stirring up trouble by speaking up. By dismissing Kylie's valid concerns and making her feel as though she's overreacting or creating drama by speaking up, her manager's invalidating her experiences and emotions, causing her to doubt herself and her perception of the situation.
Stacy was a yes person. You could ask her to climb a mountain and she would climb a mountain. She didn't really respect anyone below her. There were a lot of people that didn't think that Stacy liked them because she didn't give them the time of day, but anybody above her, she was a yes person. So if Steve called her in, she would have just said yes, whether she wanted to or not. And she was a rock star. I'm not going to ever say she wasn't. And, you know, I've worked with people like this in the past, and I've always been able to somehow get around that and work with them. And this time I just couldn't. And in hindsight, I do think that it had a lot to do with the manager. I definitely think that she was pitting people against each other. She was doing that between me, Stacy, and the operations superintendent, Steve. So then there was another outage that came in, a huge outage. I don't remember why. But Steve did not call me in again. I was really upset about this one because I was promised that I would get to work some of it. And so I came in the next day. I was upset that I didn't get called in. I made it known to my manager that I was upset. So she sent a meeting invite to all of us, because after we would have outages, we would have a meeting. Well, I didn't go to the meeting. She never did figure out any coverage for operations while we were all in this meeting. And I used that as an excuse, because somebody has to be there to make sure if an outage comes in that it gets verified and we send a crew, right? So an outage did come in, and of course they see it when they're in the meeting. So everyone rushes into operations to see what's going on. Stacy comes in and she basically took over. If I were in any other position, I probably would have stood up for myself, but because of the relationship that Stacy and my manager had, I just said, it looks like you have this handled. And then I said, is there anything I can do to help? And she didn't answer me. And I said, Stacy, is there anything I can do to help? Like, I said it louder so she could hear me. And she snapped at me and said, no. And I was upset. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I didn't get angry. I didn't yell at anybody. I didn't stomp around. I just quietly put my head down and started working on something else. So the next day, I was called into my manager's office. She was visibly upset with me. She asked me why I didn't go to the outage meeting. And I admitted to her that I was upset. And I felt that I wasn't needed at the meeting because I was not a part of the outage. I assumed they would need somebody to cover the emergency lines in case an outage came in while the meeting occurred. And she replied that she was my manager. She included me in the outage meeting because she wanted me there. So she was very mad at me. You know, all I could do at this point was apologize. Then she said she was irritated and that she doesn't have time for this childish drama. I've never actually intentionally brought drama to work. And, you know, I thought it was interesting because Stacy's always bringing up her home life at work. She's always sick with some stomach problem or back problem. And she talks about issues with her mom and her marital issues. And she comes to work in a bad mood. And when she comes to work in a bad mood, people are like, oh, what's wrong with Stacy? And so I asked her how many times she remembered having to reprimand me for drama or insubordination. And she didn't answer me. And I replied, you know, this is the only time I can remember you being upset of being insubordinate in any way. So she went on to discuss the meeting and kind of told me what was going on. And then she came back to me and she said I looked ridiculous when I was mad and that I needed to be aware that everyone saw how I acted. And I told her it's not my intention to bring attention to myself. This is 4 years of pent-up frustration that I've talked to you about. And I did my very best that I could to compose myself in the midst of my emotions. I did not react. You know, I just became silent and I began to work intently on other things. And I could go on regarding this meeting, but there was literally no resolution at all. If I said something and she didn't have an answer for it, she would redirect the conversation and just about how ridiculous I am. Managers don't like you to just come to them with problems. They want you to have resolutions too. But sometimes there are no resolutions, and that's when you need the support from your manager. And I just feel like at that time I wasn't getting any support at all.
Kylie's manager exploits her emotional vulnerability to exert control. When Kylie expresses concerns of frustrations, her manager dismisses them, labeling her as overly dramatic. This manipulation undermines Kylie's confidence and makes her doubt the validity of her feelings. Her manager takes advantage of her visible emotions because, as she said, she wears her heart on her sleeve. So her manager then uses this as a tool to further undermine her and assert dominance. Consequently, Kylie feels powerless and inadequate, leading to a toxic work situation characterized by emotional manipulation and intimidation.
This is the part of my story where I was really beginning to question myself. I had never had a situation like this. I have worked in some of the most unprofessional situations with some of the most unprofessional people, and I was always able to figure out a way to work with them. And in this situation, I couldn't do it. And so I did start thinking that maybe it was me. It was also the fact that these situations were happening more and more and more. And every time there was an issue, she was calling me into her office and she was saying, you need to figure this out. You know, you need to stop being so snippy and hard to work with. And so the only problems that I really had in that position were, it was my manager, it was Steve, And it was Stacy. And those were the people that I worked the closest with. Everybody else liked me, as far as I knew. I guess to move on, so some weeks later, I applied for another position in engineering, not like systems engineer, but operation engineering. And I wanted to move into that department because I felt like it would be a better place for me to learn and develop personally. I had a lot of colleagues in that area that I worked with. A lot of them approached me and said, you should apply for this position. I'm going to put a good word in for you. So I applied for it. The application process came and went. I heard through the grapevine that they were going to choose me for that position. And I had a couple of the team members come and tell me that, hey, we're not supposed to let the cat out of the bag, but you're going to get that position. Well, then a couple days later, one of my coworkers called me just so mad. And he goes, well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I don't know this for sure, but I guess they're not going to hire you because all of a sudden this weird, mysterious application came in last minute. And he said, I want you to know that I went to my boss and said, take me off the interview committee because I think this is all rigged. So then I come to work, and I thought it was odd that my manager and the HR director decided to pull me into my manager's office because usually it's done in the HR's office and it's done with the HR director, not the manager. They tell me that they decided to go in a different direction. And I was like, okay, that's weird. And so I kind of clung to those words. I'm like, so you were moving towards my direction, but then you decided to veer off and go in a different direction. Okay, that's fine. So a few days later, I went to speak to the supervisor of that department to let him know I'd be interested in any future positions that open up. He was my friend. Like, I was friends with him outside of that organization. So I just said, on a side note, I just don't think that my manager is happy with me. And he confirmed that she's let it be known that she's not happy with me. I also should tell you, I was involved in the union. This is a union job, and I was a shop steward. He told me he thought it was because I was involved in the union. That was his opinion. He asked me to keep this to myself because it was only his opinion, but she has not been happy with me speaking to the engineers about union stuff. I also asked him, is there anything that you could see that I could do differently, or do you see anything that I could do to improve my relationship with her? And he basically said, no, just like get out of the union. I also want to note that before I became a shop steward, Stacy was a shop steward, and she felt like our manager didn't like her being in the shop steward position. She said it stressed her out, and so that's why I took it over. But then I became the shop steward, and lo and behold, I didn't have a good relationship with her anymore.
Labor laws prohibit employers from encouraging union members to leave the union because it violates their rights to organize and collectively bargain. It's also illegal for employers to retaliate against employees for being members of the union. Employers discriminate against union members for various reasons, including a desire to maintain control over workplace decisions, to resist collective bargaining efforts, or to keep the union from challenging management's authority. It sounds like Kylie's manager was breaking the rules of the labor laws.
At this time, in the area that I live in, we were the fastest growing county in the United States. And so with that, people are building houses and they need power to these houses. And so the workload was really, really just tripling. All the departments around us were having to work overtime. And my manager was not allowing any overtime for us. I would stay late, like 15, 20 minutes. And I don't know if my manager had people watching me or if she had busybodies in other parts of management. I don't know why, but they would report to her when they would see my car in the parking lot. I have a feeling that she asked them to report it to her. And so she would text me or call me and ask me what I was still doing there. I'm older. My kids are older. I don't have a family that I have to rush home to. I don't have to take anyone to soccer practice. And a lot of times I would get into conversations and I would be there longer. So I told her, I'm not writing overtime down. And then there were times I would ask for overtime and she would say, absolutely not. And she would say, if Stacy can work without overtime, so can you. But Stacy was allowed to come in like on the weekend sometimes to catch up on her work. And I was never allowed any overtime. We've had several conversations where she pulled me into her office too. And she would say, you know, why are you having to work so much overtime? And how come Stacy doesn't have to work overtime? And I said, I don't know if Stacy is or is not working overtime. And she goes, well, she leaves right at 5. And I said, well, I know she comes in sometimes after she goes home and takes care of stuff and comes back, and she would get irritated with me, and she'd say, well, she has a different job than you. She always talked in circles all the time. So she told me, I want you to leave at 5 o'clock every day. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to end up getting behind on things. And I don't understand why every department around me is always allowed as much overtime as they need, but I'm not. Whenever I would say something or start talking, she would give me what I call dead eyes. Like, she would just look at me like she was bored. Anyway, then it came to the point where she said, well, you need to let me know if you're still lingering at the office for whatever reason. I didn't say anything, and I should have, but it's like, nobody else has to do this for you, but I have to. So this went on for quite a while, her and I going back and forth. I mean, I have a lot of stories I could tell, but we don't have, 2 months to tell this story. I started working some overtime and not writing it down because I didn't care about the overtime. I just wanted to make sure that I was doing my job correctly. And this is the other thing. Like, Stacy complained all the time about having to work overtime. So I know she was working overtime. And she made it clear daily that she doesn't want to work any longer than she has to. My manager would sometimes call Stacy in on her day off. She'd have to cancel all of her appointments and come in on her day off to work. And so she was getting overtime for those days. She would always say every time, if Stacy can get out of here on time, you should be able to as well. The engineers, they were working so much overtime, they were complaining. They're like, where's our work-life balance? And all of their work was coming down to us. And so I brought that to her attention one time too in another meeting. I said, the staking engineers are not kept at the same standards as Stacy and I are. She denied this happened. She said, no, they don't work that much overtime. Well, then I would ask them, and the one of them, he's like, I have worked 48 hours this month overtime, and I need to work more.
Kylie's manager is asserting control over Kylie's schedule and gaslighting her into believing the workload can be managed without working overtime, which in hindsight, Kylie now realizes isn't true. Her manager was trying to intimidate Kylie to maintain dominance and undermine her confidence. Ultimately, this unequal treatment shows a misuse of power and created a hostile environment which started to have serious effects on Kylie's work product and her mental health.
So there was a point, too, where she was asking me about, why I couldn't keep up with the workload. And she was questioning all the mistakes I was making. And I said, I'm making more mistakes because I'm rushing through my work. And she told me she wants me out of operations the minute that it turns 5 o'clock and to log out and go home. I repeatedly explained my concerns that oftentimes there's last minute phone calls that come in or a lineman will need my assistance. They'll walk in at like 4:48 or 4:58 or whatever, whatever time, like the last hour, 0 hour, or the staking department needs me to complete a task and it's going to take more than 10 minutes or it's just busy. The busy nature of operations, and it prevents me from completing my work by 5 p.m. on the dot. And so she said, well, let's switch your hours from 6:30 to 5 to 6:45 to 5:15. I told her, okay. I mean, I really didn't think that was going to help, but I told her, that's fine. We'll see if that works. And it didn't. I mean, everybody knew I was there at 5:15, and everybody was working overtime, so they were still there. So they would just come to me at 0 hour then. So a member had contacted the office to ask about a light that was in his development where he lived. And one of the customer service representative called me to ask for advice on what to tell the member. So the customer was complaining about the light being too bright. So we had just replaced all of these older lights with these LED lights, and they were very bright. He requested a shield be placed on the light. So my manager told me that the company does not own the lights, which I knew was wrong. The power company does own the lights. But I didn't question this just because, my relationship with my manager. So I forwarded that email that I had received from my manager to the customer service representative. Then the customer called back angry and demanded to speak with my supervisor. I just told the customer service rep that I would just take the call. So I apologized that he was frustrated. Well, come to find out, they can adjust the lights, and they were able to resolve this situation. I think the supervisor contacted my manager to find out kind of what was going on more. So my manager came to my desk in that open area where everybody was, and she demanded to know where I got the information that we don't own the lights. And there were a bunch of people standing around, And I said, somebody told me that. And she said, I want to know right now who told you that. That is misinformation that should not have been told to you. Who told you? And I said, I don't want to name that person in this room, so I forward you that email. And the email was her stating that we did not own the streetlights. If I would have called her out in front of everybody, can you imagine how much trouble I would have been in? She never brought it up again. Nothing, not one word was said.
The lack of accountability is evident through the actions of Kylie's manager. Despite providing incorrect information to Kylie, her manager shifts blame onto her, demanding an explanation and scolding her for the mistake. When presented with the evidence proving her own error, the boss fails to take responsibility or offer an apology. This refusal to acknowledge wrongdoing perpetuates a toxic work environment where employees are unfairly blamed and disrespected. It undermines trust and morale within the team, ultimately hindering productivity and fostering a culture of fear rather than accountability. And Kylie was at the center of this toxic situation.
So I was having some issues with my son, and he was kind of going through some things, and I told my manager about it. I wanted her to know I might need to take some time off. I wanted you to know why. Well, then she got to the point where every other day or two, she would ask me, how's that going? How's everything going? She actually had friended me on Facebook when I very first started in operations, which I didn't like. Well, she kept going on my Facebook and looking for things on my Facebook. And I had posted some sort of, it wasn't a personal item because I don't post a lot of personal stuff. And so I posted a meme that said something about, you know, no matter what, you still love your kids, or I don't know, something like that. Well, she was like, oh, I saw you posted that and you must be having some trouble with your son. And I was like, no, I just thought it was really nice and I just wanted to share it with people. And so she was using my personal life against me. So she said, she knows I'm going through a lot in my personal life and I can't let it affect my work. And I told her, I have a lot of support in my personal life. And if I'm coming across as snippy, it doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in my personal life. She disagreed with me and said, well, regardless of whether you think it's affecting your job, it's affecting your job and all the people you work around. And she said, there have been issues in our department for years. And Steve has said that you have been a problem for years. And I told her, I'm trying to work on this, but I was unaware that I've been a problem for years. So this year, they were sending out peer reviews, surveys. And so I got a few for my colleagues and coworkers. And she said, she just got a survey result back, and she feels the results will be eye-opening for me. And she said, no one talks to her the way I do, which I've never talked to her disrespectfully. I disagreed with her a lot on things. You know, and I feel like no matter how terrible your manager is, you have to respect the position, not the person. After the meeting, I went and talked to, you know, some of my coworkers, and I just asked them to please, like, give me, like, some coworkers that I'm still friends with, that I still talk to this day. I've maintained friendships with them since I've been gone, and I trusted them, and I just asked them, you know, just give me some sincere, honest feedback, because I really need to know if this is an issue that I need to deal with. And I just asked, you know, am I approachable? Do I ever come across as snippy? Have I ever snapped at you? If I have, I really, truly want to know. And nobody said I was unapproachable, and they've never heard that. Two of the four people I spoke with said that they received those surveys on me, and they gave me all fives. I guess there was like a 1 to 5 rating, and they gave me 5 and talked about how helpful I was and that they believed I was an asset to the company and the department. My manager is not self-aware at all. She doesn't realize how loud and obnoxious she is. I mean, there are times where I would witness a conversation that had nothing to do with me because I worked in that open area, and she would be a part of that conversation. And then she would be telling somebody at the end of the day about that conversation. And I would think in my head, that is not how that conversation went. And so I didn't know if she was lying or if she saw a little snippet of negativity, which, you know, or constructive criticism rather, and she took it to the extreme.
Working under her bullying manager was taking a toll on Kylie, and she was looking for a break in the clouds. So when a new opportunity presented itself, and with encouragement from others, she was ready and willing to take a leap of change. But with a controlling manager in her way, her chances of success were slim to none.
The engineering systems manager, we'll call him Dave. And then the person underneath him, he's also an engineer, but I'm going to call him John. So Dave is John's boss, and they work in the systems engineering, like they build the substations. John really likes me, kind of gave me a rundown on this project. So it was basically updating the whole system so that you could, so you didn't have to send linemen out to the field all the time. So, you know, I would ask him about, hey, what's going on with this new system that we're putting in? And he would always explain to me how it would work. And I was really interested and excited to see, you know, this new age system coming into our company. And so he said we would eventually need to hire people to work this system. One day I just happened to ask him, I said, do you think I would qualify for this type of a job? And he said, oh yeah, I think you would need training. I said, do you think I should pursue it? And he said, oh, I think you should. Well, then he started asking me, hey, have you talked to your manager about this? And I was like, no, not yet, not yet. And I said, actually, I want to go talk to Dave first because I want to see if Dave thinks I would qualify for this. So I went into Dave's office and I told him I'd be interested in pursuing this career path if it came available. He thought it sounded like a great idea. He said he doesn't really have the role defined yet. He said it's going to be a process that they have to go through. And I said, well, I understand all that. Like, I understand it's going to take time and it's not something that he can promise me. But I just said, you know, do you think that I would fit that role? Do you think I could learn it and do it? And he said, yeah. He goes, I think that you're capable. And he goes, but I think you need to talk to your manager about it. And I said, I wanted to get your input first because I don't want to talk to my manager and then find out later that you don't think it's a role that I would be good at, you know? And he goes, oh, I definitely do. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go talk to my manager about it. So I went into my manager's office, started telling her about my conversation with Dave, and she interrupted me and she said, well, that's usually a lineman's job. And she goes, that would be up to Dave if he wants you in that position. And then her next words were, and she got really mad. Her face got red and she goes, you need to start being good at the job you're in. And she pointed towards where my desk was and her voice got really loud and she brought up my upcoming performance review. And she said, I have gotten more feedback from the surveys that indicate your poor performance. So I asked her what kind of feedback it was. And she said, well, your attention to detail is poor. And I said, well, can you give me more detail as to what specifically you're talking about? Because I wasn't upset that she was telling me I was getting feedback like that. I was just like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I want to fix this. Then she got frustrated and she goes, I don't know. I'm not even thinking about your review right now. I have other things on my mind. And I said, okay, I have no problem receiving constructive feedback, but I'd like it to be specific in areas that I need to improve on so I can actually fix it. I've never received any of that. Then she said she's never had a problem helping someone develop when they do a good job. And she stated that your performance review isn't going to be great. So I thanked her for her time and I just got up and left. Right before I walked out of the office, she goes, how's your son doing? And I said, my son's doing fine and I'm fine. I'm not stressed about him at all. I have tremendous support from my family. And so she always brings him up. I thought she was using him as a reason that I'm performing poorly. But at that point in time, I hadn't had any conversations with her for months on that. Like, that issue was resolved. So John called me later from his personal cell phone to mine. He said, I talked to Dave and he had a talk with your manager. And he said that she had asked Dave to tell John to stop talking to me about the position. At the point, my mentality was, I'm okay. She's a bully. And then I would swing back to, maybe it is me. Maybe I am a loser, you know?
After enduring years of bullying and gaslighting from her manager, Kylie started to internalize the negative feedback and started to doubt her own abilities. Constant criticism and manipulation led her to believe that she was a subpar worker, despite evidence suggesting otherwise. Her manager's tactics, such as setting her up to fail, further reinforced this perception. Over time, Kylie's self-esteem eroded, and she began to second-guess herself. This cycle perpetuated a harmful narrative of self-doubt and undermined Kylie's professional growth. Kylie didn't realize the devastating impact this bullying was having on her mental health. The grave effects of bullying in the workplace are detrimental to those being targeted. In the next 5 minutes of her story, Kylie will discuss how in her weakest moment of hopelessness and despair, she attempted to take her own life.
At that point, my stress level started to skyrocket. I was losing sleep at night because I kept failing at work or feeling like I was failing at work. I started to feel alone. I would have panic attacks. My anxiety just was through the roof. I was also developing a fear that people weren't being honest with me when they would tell me something. Around that summer, Stacy moved into another department and another coordinator came in. I'm just going to call her new coordinator. And when she came back, of course, she had PTO already scheduled out. So I took over Stacy's role. And part of Stacy's role was coding the labor to the work orders. During the first 2 years before Stacy moved into the other department, she was supposed to be teaching me how to do this, but she really wasn't. So what we had a paid holiday coming up. So if we had a paid holiday, we worked 4 10s, right? 4 10-hour days. And we had one day off. When there's a paid holiday, you're going to end up with you're going to end up with 48 hours. So they would either have people work 8-hour days, or you would work 4 10s and you would take 2 PTO hours. I always took 2 PTO hours because we had so much PTO and I never have the time to take it off anyway. So I had a huge bank of PTO. Well, she decided after all these years of us being allowed to do that, she decided that I need to figure out a schedule where I'm only working 40 hours the week of July 4th. So I was expected to cover my workload as well as the second coordinator's workload in only 8 hours per day instead of 10. And this was extremely stressful to me. It was month end. I had to get the payroll coded and in. So all other employees in every department were allowed to work their normal 10-hour shift with 2 hours off using their PTO per day, but I wasn't. It got to where she nitpicked me on every little thing that I did, every little tiny mistake, every clerical error got nitpicked. And there was a gentleman that called in. He was a logger and he was doing some logging and he wanted to a line drop so he could fall a tree safely. And it was a secondary line. That's the line that goes from the meter to the house. And it served a well and the well was utilized by an HOA. And I said, well, I'm going to try to contact the HOA, but a lot of times their information isn't updated. So it's your responsibility to contact them. The line got dropped. A customer called in angry, you know, how can they do this? They should have warned us. Instantly, I thought I was in trouble. So I called the superintendent and I said, this is what happened. Did I handle it right? Isn't that how we normally handle it? He said, yeah, that's not how we normally handle it. So then I reached out to my manager. I asked her to call me. And this really wasn't even that big of a deal. But I made it a big deal in my head because I just knew I was going to be in trouble. So she called me. I told her what happened. She said, it's really not that big of a deal. And so I got off the phone. I was like, phew. Well, then the next day she called me and scrutinized me about it. And then she goes, I talked to Stacy and Stacy says, yeah, it is protocol that we leave it up to them. But she always calls the customer and tells them. And I said, well, I would have called the customer and told them, but their information was out of date. They didn't have a working number. And she goes, why did you call the operations superintendent? She just kept drilling me on what I did. And I said, well, I just wanted to make sure that I was right. Well, she goes, well, you've worked here long enough. Don't you know your job? And I said, yes, I do, but I just wanted to make sure. And she got me all flustered. And then she goes, is there something you're leaving out that you're not telling me? So this is where I'm going to get upset. So I snapped. And I want you to know, like, throughout this whole probably last 2 years that I worked there, my family members, my friends, my coworkers, they all watched me decline. I wasn't fun anymore. You know, I wasn't supposed to work overtime, but my workload was so enormous that I couldn't sleep at night. So I was literally getting up at 2 a.m., logging into my computer and working until like 7 o'clock at night to make sure everything was perfect. No mistakes. I mean, not every night, but I would do that quite a bit, especially at month end. And but that day I snapped and I actually decided I was going to take my own life. I was like, I'm going to do it tonight after everyone goes to bed. And then that day I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And then my husband comes in at the end of my day and he goes, hey, we have dinner reservations with our friends. Don't forget. And I was like, shit. But I came home, I gave him a huge kiss, and I went upstairs and laid in the upstairs bedroom, and I took my pills. And then he found me, took me to the emergency room. I like woke up, and I was just thinking, well, it didn't work this time. What can I do to make it sure it works next time? That was my mindset. So my husband contacted the union, and they contacted HR, and they allowed me to go on short-term disability. And I took the full time off. I went to counseling. I actually got a statement from my counselor, because I'm positive when I go back that I'm going to be fired. So her statement that she wrote out and signed was, Kylie has been significantly depressed related to her job, specifically being targeted by her supervisor, who she describes as a bully. The situation has been growing for the past 3 years, and the client has been unsuccessful in gaining any support from her HR department or any other entity at her place of employment. She experienced an increase in drinking to daily use to manage her stress, and her husband brought it to her attention, and her depression culminated in a suicide attempt. Her significant disabilities and inability to work are contributed by her current depression, and recent suicide attempt is clearly work-related. I was going to give that to our union, and they said, no, that's an accusation. You can't do that. They didn't help me at all. This is my opinion, but I think that they basically used me as a pawn in their negotiation. They said, we'll make her go away if you'll do something for me. And I paid dues my whole time. The whole time I worked there, I was actually actively involved in the union. So I don't get it. Like, it's not necessarily the union that's bad or the company that's bad. It's just whoever's managing it at that time.
Going on short-term disability and finding a therapist saved Kylie's life. If you're dealing with bullying at work, it's critical that you talk to someone who can help walk you through your situation, give you understanding, hope, and a resolution. No workplace is worth this kind of struggle. Luckily, Kylie had her husband and family to support her during this difficult time. However, she didn't receive the understanding and support from her employer.
So I came back, I reached out to HR. She was very, like, I guess, curt with me. So when I walked into, I mean, you could cut the tension with a knife. Stacy wasn't nice to me when she would come in. Everyone else was nice to me. Even our superintendent was nice. He said, welcome back. I had people coming to my desk, teamsing me. I had the warmest welcome from everybody else. My manager was very, very standoffish. Like, I could tell she was mad at me, didn't like me, didn't want me there. The union rep had a meeting with HR, the HR director, her, and the general manager. So I know she knew. And then when I came back, they basically built a case to fire me right when I came back. So every little mistake that I made, I made one clerical error in a report, and that was brought up in my termination papers. I have a lot more to say, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be said. You know, I wasn't welcome there. So I was really stressed out about being there. I wish I had the state of mind I have now. I would have just quit. I was put on administrative leave pending an investigation of my performance. I think they had a plan to, if I did come back, that they were going to find a way to terminate me, and that's what they did.
Sometimes getting let go from your job is the best thing that could happen to you. It's scary to make the decision to leave a workplace that's familiar for something that's unknown. In Kylie's case, she was pushed out and into a workplace with a healthy and supporting environment.
I was actually recruited by a company, but I work with a really amazing team. Like, their workflow is just flawless, and their team work is amazing. I'm not micromanaged at all. I love life again. I'm smiling. I'm laughing. I didn't think there was anything that would give me fulfillment besides the job that I was in. But as soon as I updated my resume and put it up online, I had people asking me to come work for them. And it was just, I was blown away. And then I had imposter syndrome where I'm like, maybe I'm not that great. Maybe I'm going to get there and they're going to hate me. And they don't. The place I work now, they want to keep me forever. The reason why I called in to tell my story is because your stories have helped me heal. I'm still healing. To this day, I'm still healing. Well, I guess it's been a year. And so I'm still healing. I'm much better than I used to be, but I was in such a dark place and such a deep, deep mental state that I didn't even realize what I was doing. And I want your listeners to know that they need to not allow themselves to get that deep. They need to get out now. I know it sucks and it's not fair, but if I would have been successful in ending my life, that wouldn't have been fair to my family or my friends. If you see your mental health declining because of your job, you need to get out now. And there are other jobs out there. They're everywhere. I just told my husband the other day, I had a really stressful day at work because every job is stressful to some level, right? But I had a really tough day where I had a big workload and I was trying to get it done. And I was like, whew, that was a really tough day. And I got up and I went to stretch and I realized I didn't have that knot in the back of my head that I usually get when I have all that stress. And then I also noticed that when I went to walk around, I wasn't stiff. And I started to reflect back on when I worked in my old position. And I had a constant knot in the back of between my shoulders constantly, every day. And then I was losing my hair. My hair's gotten thicker. Every morning when I would get up, when I was working at the other place, I would shuffle around like an old lady because my body was so tense that it would take a minute to relax. And I thought, I don't have that anymore either. So, I mean, my stresses were physical as well. It's not worth it. And I just beg whoever's listening, please make the right choice for yourself and just get out.
Your mental health and physical well-being should never be sacrificed for a job. Leaving your workplace may seem daunting, but it's a courageous step towards reclaiming your life and finding fulfillment. Trust that there are better opportunities awaiting you beyond your current toxic situation. Embrace change as a catalyst for growth and positive transformation. Surround yourself with supportive people who uplift and empower you on your journey. Remember, leaving a toxic workplace is not a sign of weakness, but rather a powerful act of self-care and self-respect that can lead to a brighter, healthier future. Next time on Toxic Workplace.
Over time, it became just a loud guy, a rude guy, a guy who wants to mansplain, race-splain, culture-splain, kid-splain, you know, and was becoming the loudest voice in the room all the time. But it wasn't like, man, he's got some really good things to say. It's just drivel. And it's just posturing, and would stand up in a meeting and, you know, have a monologue about what we should do or how we should do it, or send emails, you know, that you had to like scroll to read about how we should be doing things better, but then was 0% interested in actually following through with anything or implementing anything. It was like, well, you just take it or leave it. Like, you know, I mean, I just was thinking about it. So I just wanted to share it. And it's like, okay.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you have a story to share, please go to toxicworkplacepodcast.com, click on Be a Guest, and fill out the submission form. Your story will be completely anonymous. All names are changed to protect the employer and the employee. And if you like this podcast, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.